So what we're going to start with is we're going to start talking about what is called in Hebrew hashkacha, which is providence. And providence takes many forms in our life, but it's an essential thing to understand, and to understand the framework and the workings, because not everything works in the same way, and it really pays to understand the different mechanisms involved in providence and how it affects different people and different aspects of the world in different manners. Understanding it can be something which changes your life and gives a greater meaning to details that go on. But I'd like to just, first of all, just set up a framework, because what happens is this is a very, very broad topic. And what will often occur is that we'll focus on one topic and then it'll overflow into many other topics. I want to delineate four separate topics, and we're going to have to just think about these separately. The first is Hashem, God's interaction with the world beyond humans. God's interaction with the world beyond humans. Like, how much is He micromanaging that world? That's topic number one. Topic number two is within the human world, among humans. How much does God give specific attention to individuals, different individuals, at different times as well? Meaning, how does that work? Is it a blanket rule? Are there ups and downs? Is it a three-dimensional landscape in that respect? That's topic number two. Topic number three, which is worthwhile exploring, is how different people's providence interacts with other people. So, for instance, if you, and I'm going to give you the positive example, you decide that you want to give your neighbor flowers. You know, for whatever reason, you see they've had a hard week, it's a special day, it may be Father's Day, whatever it is, and you go out and you go buy them flowers, and you do something unexpectedly nice to them. Did you just change their providence? Did your free will affect the providence that was preordained for them? That's when you start expanding it, right? And finally, the last topic worthwhile thinking about within these is when it doesn't seem to go right. When certain people don't seem to be getting the we'll call it the exactitude that you'd be expecting. It's too good for some people, you think, in your estimation, or it's too bad for other people, and that could go on a large spectrum. I want to just point out, the reason I want to point out that there are these major four topics is to understand tonight I'd like to cover with you the first. The first is God's interaction with the world at large, beyond humanity, every detail within the world. That's the building block. I know that as we're going to think, there's going to be lots of questions which come up. They will overflow into those other three topics. Okay, and I want to make sure that just at this point in time, that we're going to have a focus on one at a time. Because the moment you start overflowing, you lose focus of the different aspects of it. Okay, so just to delineate to the goal of what this evening's goal is. For those of you who are interested, anybody who is interested in the second part of the topic, I will be speaking about this in Restaurant Rogers Park on Wednesday. Okay, that's between humans. But that's just an advert, okay? In the meantime, let's delve straight in. I'd like to just, with your permission, present to you four particular cases over here. And I just want to make sure we have the right volume and the... And let me just...
Like a lion. Leopards have learned new tricks for hunting here on the plains.
So I don't have the gory details, but let's concentrate on a scene. This is a scene from South Africa, which is where I come from, and you see a scene of the migration of the wildebeest, or the wildebeest, as they pronounce it in America, has something to that effect. The wildebeest, the wildebeest transmigrate across the plains, and there are hundreds of thousands of them. So I'd like to draw your attention to is not so much let's call him Freddy who got killed. Let's think about Sam over there. And what about, let's say, John, who was next to him before? Right, so out of all those animals, and the leopard got one of them. So the question on the table is, why was it specifically Freddy? If you just, I'm hoping it's not connected to anybody, but why was he the one who was captured by the leopard? Okay, just question scenario number one. Set the scene, Freddy the wildebeest, why was he the one out of those thousands and thousands who was the one captured by the leopard? Okay, Let's change the question from why, but rather, does God manage that? Did God specifically have in mind that wildebeest would be the one to be captured?
I think not.
You think not? What?
So I think God pushed, so a lot of rules for the rules of nature, and then they just go. And that's why we're able to discern the rules, because the patterns repeat over and over again. And the fact that we can observe and predict something that happens, to me, says that God just kind of said, okay, I'm setting it up like this.
Great. So what Leslie's pointing out is that there must be some form of rule, because there's something to be expected. There's something to be expected. We can rely on the way that things work within the world. That's a great point. And so you would say that in this particular case, you don't necessarily think that particular wildebeest had an X on his back, but there may have been. Now the question is, to what degree of God involvement there is. Okay, so just food for thought.
I think like maybe it smelled a certain way, or it moved a certain way, or it had a certain age, and the other yeah. animals.
Okay, great. So there's lots of reasons we can pin on this. So now, but let's take a step backwards, and I think this is a rhetorical question at this point, but. So, to what degree was God involved in that then? Was he absent? Was he fishing? Was he watching over it, but he didn't control it? He left it up to the rules of nature? Do you see? That's what I like to...
But didn't he create?
Great. So, he corrected... But while that's happening, does that mean to say that God is therefore gone fishing during that period? That it's just... He just sort of pressed the button and now it's working?
Aren't you looking at it wrong? You're looking at the poor prey. What about that poor hungry leopard? You know,
fantastic.
He's really happy.
But
right.
I don't know if you want to spend too much time here.
I would like to give you four scenarios and then come back to them as a whole. Okay, so just to paint you four different particular incidents and just as a whole consider them individually. Okay, so let me get back to the thoughts that are going to be on this one, and I want to just see it as a whole. Notice the difference between this incident and the next one. Okay, moving on to scenario number two.
When the winds picked up, Granbury resident Jerry Shuttlesworth knew he was in trouble.
And I was watching the tree start to buckle over. I said, oh God, no, please, God, don't let this happen. The wind got so strong. But at that point, I said, Junior, we're in trouble.
Junior is Jerry's six-year-old pit bull, his baby. Jerry grabbed him and ran for cover in his mobile home's laundry room.
So I was praying. I said, Junior, it'll be okay, it'll be okay. And I was praying, and the house went together, vacuumed in, and then blew out. And I don't think I could figure out, because I went upside down holding on to him, and he was no more.
So he was just sucked out of your arm?
Right. I never felt him leave my arms. I never felt nothing. All I know, I was over him like this, and the next thing I know, I'm upside down, and he's nowhere.
That was the story of Junior and Jerry. And the end of the story, thankfully,
is... He's missing pets. Jerry got the call Friday morning and rushed right over.
Hey, buddy! Hey! Hey, Junior!
So you know that Junior was among the many of tens of dogs and animals that were lost during that tornado. And so again, the question is thinking about it from a little... this is a little bit of a different scenario. Now, the particular case over here is somewhat different to before with Freddy the wildebeest. Over here, Junior, can anybody tell me, why does we'll call it Junior's providence differ, perhaps? Why would Junior's providence differ to Freddy's, the wildebeest? What do you think, William?
Why did he survive?
Well, I mean, like, if you compare him to the rest of the lost dogs who did not find their owners or weren't found... So yes.
But is there such a thing as a Gibbul Neshama for dogs?
Oh, that's true. So on a yes, this is a plane which I'm not fully qualified to talk about. But there is a notion of Gilgul Neshamot, and we don't know to what degree. That what it means to say that certain aspects of souls return in different forms. Now that's that's going to be much too deep for what we're going to cover tonight. Just also because it's a very esoteric topic.
In simple language, each and every one of us, and I don't know if animals too, come with a time and date and destiny.
That's true, but not all animals are Gilgulim. And
that's a good question.
No, they aren't. No. Certain animals bear certain, we'll call it fractures of or pieces of a neshama, which need to fulfill a specific purpose, which is what you're referring to. But it's not a hard and fast rule, so it may be that that's behind it. There might be something specific. But let's just for a moment, what I want to do is, you see, this complicates it because we could always, or we can't, because we don't have the spiritual sensitivity to be able to pinpoint that there are individuals still alive today who are able to sense this, but to be able to sense what animals have particular souls in them.
Oh, okay.
But for our purposes, without that elements to it, I like to just do it in a devoid of the Gilgulim aspect, just because to clarify the rules. And the Gilbagul will be an exception to the rule, which will come into play, and it definitely does come into play, but not on the, we'll call on the general level.
I think cases like this, I mean, this is where you really feel that you're vulnerable and subject to forces that are beyond you, that, you know, that this is when you really feel that God rules over you, that when you don't determine what happens to you, when it's just not up to you.
Correct. Yes. Correct. So you're right. This particular incident would be as well. This is sort of out of your control.
Why was this dog saved where the other animal, whatever you're calling it,
the cat from next door?
Well, maybe
there were many other animals that weren't found lost for forever. Why was this animal saved?
Right,
as opposed to why was the wildebeest?
Yes, any differences? What are, Miriam, any differences you thought?
Well, I thought maybe, because like here it affects that person, maybe it wasn't about the dog at all, maybe it was about his experience losing the dog.
So just worthwhile just thinking, differentiating the two scenarios, is that the wildebeest getting captured didn't necessarily affect a human being. This does affect a human being, meaning Jerry is very much connected to this dog, and its salvation somehow is connected to him as well, more than the dog as well. So one would have to question if it changes in those respects. I think that's a very valid point. And let's go jump straight to humans.
I know you did.
This is Missouri Lotto, a $285 million Powerball. He wonders if he's won it.
49, 55, oh my God! 20, oh my
God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!
Oh my God!
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my millions and millions of people who are paying for this, and if there's $250 million at stake, that means there was a lot more which was spent on lottery tickets at those weeks. Okay, so there are a lot of people involved, and he's the one who specifically got the winning ticket, and he bought a bunch actually. If you looked at his card beforehand, they were actually bought five numbers. So this was the last of his five numbers that he bought. So in terms of him, bless him. What about the lady who runs the cafe where he bought it? You know, so is there, to what degree is God running that specific incident that differentiating between him and other people? Okay, just to put this in sharp contrast. And finally, for those of you familiar with the movie Ushpizin,
yes,
what is the dynamic?
It's a
So this is a particular scene for those of you familiar with the movie. Again, it's just these people are dire straits financially, and they're both praying at the same time as they're praying. It's just beautifully framed in terms of this person randomly going down the list to find a specific number, and he happens to be the recipient of this transferred money because there was extra money which was endowed to somebody. So again, just comparing this, and one would have to think carefully. I leave this to you. I'm not going to delineate at this point the difference between this and the last scene. Okay, but just the four things we noticed, the four particular scenarios I'd like to think as an opener to think about is the wildebeest, really the wildebeest being captured by the leopard. Then number two is the junior being returned after the tornado. The gentleman without teeth who wins the Missouri lottery Powerball. And finally, the Moshe Balanga, who is the recipient of this endowed money. So with that in mind, just to come back over here to concentrating on these particular elements, there are two strands, there are two threads throughout Jewish tradition in regard to this question. And what I'd like to do with you in the next few minutes is to now start addressing these two historical trends throughout history of how the Hashem interacts with the world as a whole. Let's for a moment. I did not make these source sheets with the intent of terrifying anybody for size, but what I did do is I just put in a number of sources, which is helpful. Thank you so much. Why don't you send this way? With the intent of doing one or two. Now, if you're interested, I'll leave a few more there at your own leisure. Okay, so we're not going to cover everything in here, but just a few things to think about. As we take this approach, I'd like to, the movement over here this evening is the following. I'd like to present what we'll call the traditional approach, something which comes from the medieval times. Then we'll call it the more expansive approach, which is something which developed in the last 300 years more explicitly. And finally, trying to bridge the gap and trying to understand how at odds they are with one another. Okay, so that's the plan for this evening. So I don't even want to do the first page, but I'd like to just turn your attention, perhaps, to the beginning of the second page. At the top of the page, in source 3, is the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch is actually, and the authorship is unknown. It is attributed to Rabbi Aaron Alevi in the 1200s. So we're talking already now, 700 to 800 years ago from now. So this was actually written in the form of a book, in form of an instruction manual to his son, and. What he did was he took every parasha, every portion of the Torah, and he delineated all the mitzvot in that parasha and explained what the basic underpinnings and the halachot of those mitzvot. So this mitzvah that he's explaining over here is what's called tzara'at. Tzara'at is when an individual does some form of sin, the house, his clothes, his person is affected by some sort of plague, but it's a spiritual plague. To the extent that he is able to seclude himself ritually and correct that sin, this plague disappears. So something which very much represents, you can imagine, today it's hard to know. We do things right, we do things wrong. It's hard to see a one-to-one connection between what we do and what the outcome of what we do. In the days when they lived in Israel, at the time of the temple, this plague would be that it would be something which is terrifyingly close to home. When you do something, God responds. So he says in the following, I'm reading in the English, at the bottom, the purpose of this commandment is to establish within us that God's providence is specific over every individual human being. There are groups of people who think that the providence of God is all over the species on a specific level, meaning that God cares, but takes specific, we'll call it, micromanaging interest on every level, both over humans and over other living creatures. And there are other groups who think that God's providence is over all things in the world, whether living creatures or any other things, i.e. even inanimate objects, to the extent that they think that when the one leaf falls from a tree, God decreed it on it specifically that it should fall. But the second view is very illogical. The Sefer HaChinuch does not think that it makes sense that every leaf falling off the tree was specifically ordained, a little bit of coming back to what Leslie was saying earlier, that it was specifically ordained that leaf should fall then. Then, Maria, I was going to actually get to the end of this to get the full picture of his thoughts. Then there are evil groups that think that God does not operate with providence at all over anything in this lowly world, neither regarding human beings or any other living creatures. This is the view of the evil and bitter heretics. So what he does is painted for us a spectrum. Do you see what he's done? He's talked about people who think that God is micromanaging every detail in this world to the extent that leaf that falls off is specifically then. And then he talks about the one where God's in a certain sense completely deism. God's completely devoid, completely divorced from the goings on in this world. However, now he draws the medium. According to what I have heard, we bearers of truth, true faith, believe that his providence is over all species of living creatures in general, in a general sense, that the species will not be destroyed in general. But regarding the human species, we believe that God's providence is over everyone individually, and he understands their actions. Just a typo over there. He understands their actions. So now, do you see what he's done? He's painted the spectrums, complete uninvolvement or disinvolvement, apathy, over-involvement on every, to every level, and he brings it back to a medium. Where's their specific involvement when it comes to the human species? When's their more general involvement when it comes to the species of animals? Now notice, he doesn't say that God isn't involved with animals. To what degree is God involved with animals in the rest of the world?
Created.
He created it, but when it goes on, to how is he involved, on what level?
To make sure the species doesn't
Right.
happen.
Right, so it's now just to paint to understand what he's saying on the general level means to say that he's there, he's watching, but he's not specifically organizing or orchestrating that Freddy was the one or not. He's just going to make sure that wildebeest as a whole survive. Okay, just you see what the Sefer HaChinuch has done for us over here. Very clear distinctions, and this means to say that humanity is endowed with a specific relationship, a specific interaction. The things that we do are very significant to animals, less so on a specific level, more on a general level. That's the general approach. And this approach, by the way, is shared with all the medieval commentators. That specifically this time is what we call the medieval commentators. It was actually a rather dark age in the secular world, but a prolific age in Judaism. There were a lot of very important commentators who described important things across the board, and this is the shared opinion across the board. Maimonides, perhaps even Nachmanides, and a number of other earlier Rishonim, Rabbeinu Bechaya, and so forth. Yes, there were two points then.
Sorry to interrupt, but we know for a fact that certain animals have gone extinct, and very recently, and there are many times it's our fault.
Great question.
Like the dodo bird, something like that.
Fantastic question. I've been thinking about it. It troubled me a lot, and I don't necessarily have a short, quick answer. But what I would point out, and this comes back to the third topic, this is how it's important to isolate the topics, is how does free will interact with providence? Meaning, does God step back when humanity wants to be destructive? Meaning, right, God may have had a plan. What happens when humanity decides to do terrible things? Right? So one of the tenements, the basic axioms of free will is that you're able to change things. So wait a second, so then how does providence work around that? Did you really change anything? What I wonder is when it comes to the extinction of species, which is particularly in the modern era, with the advent of machinery and the technology to be able to do this, and also a lack of sensitivity to within using it, I would be interested to know if that may be the space that God left. Maybe there was some sort of form of space where God does have
the dodo bird wasn't killed with technology; they just plugged it on the head.
Absolutely. I'm just talking about how in today's day and age it's more accelerated. But yes,
absolutely.
But in general, but the point is that this is a product of humanity, of human's free will, and when free will and providence come at loggerheads, it's interesting to consider to what degree did God want it to be that way or allowed it to be that way, and we'll call it in the GPS recalculated the route to the general destination. Do you know what I'm saying? So that's a very good question, because he is making an argument over here. You know, he's making an argument about general species. But I think the extra factor, which is not addressing right now, and we're not addressing on a fuller scale, is human actions in terms of the scheme. Yes.
Yeah.
So what was I?
I'm curious, you know, if there is this clear-cut distinction between animals and human beings, is there a distinction in terms of providence between different kinds of people, people who are endowed or who are trying to come closer to Hashem? Does Hashem intervene more into their lives? For example, David HaMelech believed that God was governing every detail, every aspect of his life.
Great
some
question.
People think that, you know, God doesn't care about that.
So, Danny, you're raising a very good point, and that's why I want to just make sure that we just bring that back to the map. That's the second topic that I mentioned at the beginning, of how it you see why it's all interconnected. That's why it's so important to realize that your question is very good, is that within humanity are there different gradations, and there are. There really are. So again, this is just an advertisement. If you're able to, I will be speaking about this specifically in West Rogers Park on Wednesday. It's going to be on Lunt, 2940 Lunt, 8 p.m. I can give you the details if you're interested. But just to delineate, we're not going to have the time to be able to focus on all of these at one sitting. But it's important to realize that it isn't. What we're doing is creating the black and whites here at the beginning before the grays. Yes, Miriam, you had a comment just waiting.
Well, question, yeah.
Sure.
So it says here that, like, some people think that, like, God has pardoned some, like, negative objects, like a leaf falling, for example. But what if, like, something like that affects a person?
Right. So let's jump straight with Miriam's point. Sorry, you were saying?
I mean, no, I'm just, like, thinking, like, this is probably just maybe me. Like, let's say, like, a person walks by and sees the leaf falling and then gets, like, a message from it and, like, it affects their whole life.
Right. So, what you're seeing is this, it's not, you can't just draw schema. Do you see what's happening over here?
Yeah.
It's very hard to delineate. So with that, I'd like to just jump into Miriam's question, into the very next source. The Radak, this is Rav David Kimchi, in source 5 at the very bottom of this page, again living in the 1100s, yeah? Okay, he is primarily a Mefarish on Tanakh. And he speaks on Psalms and Tehillim, and he says the following. I'd like to read just in English at the bottom of the page. There is a great confusion among the scholarly. For some contend that when a lion tears a lamb asunder, or a similar occurrence, it is a punishment for the lamb from God. There are others who contend that there is not a system of reward and punishment, i.e. specific individual providence, except for the human species alone. Okay? We contend that there is a system of reward and punishment for other non-human species when it affects humankind. There are other opinions, but they are not worthy of being written. That's a very strong. That's a very strong. And by the way, this is the period of philosophical debate. So when he says that, he's obviously referring to specific things, and people wonder what people actually go to. Academics will go to lengths to work out who he's referring to when he says that. Okay, but I mean, you just to be put in a footnote, you know, that means you've made it to some degree. So I just want to put what Miriam said is a very important point. There is an interaction over here. It's not so simple. Now to draw in greater contrast, scene one and scene two, scenario one, scenario two. When is that wildebeest being killed? Whether it was that one or his brother who was killed, really in the greatest scheme of things, doesn't affect a human being. The leopard has supper. That's important. But in the general scheme of things, humankind weren't affected by which animal was killed. However, Jerry was affected by the fact that his dog was reunited with him. And as Miriam said, it could be more subtle than that. It could be a natural phenomenon going on around you. It could be a rainbow when you're on the highway. It could be the nature that you get to see and that affects a human. Then when it comes to that, we have an interface. We have not just nature, but nature as it affects humans. Do you see that? That's going to be the caveat within the system that the Radak is bringing. Yes.
I had a little off there, but it's surprising because this was written like 600 years approximately before
More.
Darwin.
Yes.
And Darwin, you know, the getting away from the origin of species, but the survival of the fittest and whatnot. And you know, the fact that the lamb is torn asunder. Some lamb has to be torn asunder for that lion to survive. That's the system that God set up for the wild animals. And it's the fact that some animal is going to be weak, that the other animals that prey on it will survive, that's a necessity. And God provides for them in that manner. But Darwin, who was originally a very religious man, had, I believe, described it as, you know, like when he sees the survival of the fittest and you know, the evolutionary process in that term, he said it's like seeing a painting and getting up close, and now we can see the brush strokes of God.
Absolutely. So, in general, you're raising a very large topic, which is how evolutionary theory in general works with nature and God's interaction with nature, because just to appreciate what's being argued over here is that God has specific divine providence over humans and animals that interact with humans, or nature that interacts with humans. So to just expand the Radak for a moment, But what about where he has general providence? So what does that mean? Could you see there's a little bit of a void there? It's a little bit empty at this point in time. What's the filler? Does he have, as Ezzy had said beforehand, that he set a system in motion and he comes to check on that system, but in the end of the day he wanted it to be that way and therefore he leaves it to go? And then, yes, when you discover how that system works, you think, wow, that the complexity of that system to arrive at where it is today is that perspective. Or do you say that, no, God's involved in a different way in that system than we were expecting? So that's where that room lies, but it's a much, we'd have to dedicate a lot of time just to appreciating the complexities, because some aspects of evolution would seem initially at odds with religion, which in fact they aren't. But it's important to address it, and it has been addressed. I would if you're interested in saying afterwards, I'd be happy to discuss some of the more complex issues there.
Yeah, just a comment. So, like, if a person is very connected to, like, nature or animals, then would a shem have more providence over them in relation to that person?
Well, it depends, again, it depends on that person and that to the degree that that person has hashkacha. Just to come back again now, is that if nature is, we'll call it, tied or interfacing with this particular individual, so it depends on that particular individual.
Meaning
to say, you can change the providence on you as an individual. You have the ability to be able to change that interaction. To the degree you're having it, then of course the nature around you is going to be affected. But to the degree that you're moving away from that, then you're not going to necessarily have that aura around you either. So it depends
like
on the person.
If you're noticing?
If you're noticing would be one. There's a number of ways in which you are eliciting more in your life as well. But to that degree is the degree that you'll be able to affect the things around you as well. Or they'll be affected in your benefit to benefit or detriment. Okay? And this, by the way, do you see why this is more of a simple just appreciate, this is still a simple construct, because seeing that sunset or that animal or that leaf blowing off the tree and it affects you is still a simple system, because it isn't somebody else. The moment that something else is somebody else, then do you see how complex it becomes?
Others.
Oh yes, yeah.
In a tornado, I mean, if you want to say that, you know, why does a tornado go through a certain town and affect the people of that town and not the neighboring town?
Fantastic. So
now you look at the individuals within that town.
Great.
And it just becomes.
Exactly. So now, and this is why it was important to delineate topic four. This is why you need a table of contents for this. You see, is now you start getting to much more complex systems of justice. So there are numbers of rolling gears at work in the divine systems of justice, and they're all working together. And put that all with all the individuals in that town and the town as a collective as well. And now look at the two towns together. Do you see now we get a complex system. So now, that's why it's very difficult to address. Nobody can really specifically address an incident, but we can address the rules. Do you see that? So that's what we're doing here. And the starting point today is humanity and non-humanity, right? But then we build up those rules to the point that we can understand different mechanisms. Can we pinpoint? Even if you've learnt this all, can you pinpoint? The only pinpointing you can do is inwards, because you're the only person who really knows about yourself, but nobody else. So what the point of a series like this or investigating these things wouldn't necessarily be to understand the events at large, but to understand, to get a greater sense of, first of all, purpose. That things work with a specific purpose and goal and end. And then the question is reflection. But it's as you pointed out, for us to sit and judge a particular incident that occurred, that's going to be very difficult for us, even with all the rules at hand.
Is it really important to believe that there's a connection individually or specifically for that incident to happen with that person, as much as it is to believe that, well, say there's randomness in this universe and something bad and something good is going to happen to everybody, and that Hashem is there for you to be grateful to when the good things happen and to help you through the bad things when they happen? Does it really matter whether he's planning your car accident or your or the, you know, like the lightning hitting the thing that falls on your house? You know, is it really important to believe that God's planning that individually, or just be able to turn to God when these things happen? Because they're going to happen somewhere, somebody, sometime, and sometime I figure it's going to be me, and that's how I handle it, and God's there to help me for it. I don't think that necessarily he plans specifically this horrible event. I have life that has a certain span, and sometime there's going to be something bad.
But again, there's going to have to be horrible or good all the time.
Yes.
They are very, very powerful, and it makes you think, wow.
Yes.
In addition,
the guy's there.
Not necessarily good or bad. Sometimes it's just unbelievable. I mean, I've had experiences that are just incredible.
I truly believe
that it is divine providence. It is.
I think it comes very close to the border of the topic why bad things happen to good people.
That was topic four.
Exactly. Especially
that's
in mass
why.
Events, you know, when bad things happen in mass, how do you know when you're going to be an exception?
Exactly. It's very hard to know. And that we don't have the capacity of time to be able to address right now, because this is a huge topic.
Yeah.
It's very worth, and I really think this is an important point. It's important to learn about it. Because as Nachmanides describes, there is a certain point where logic runs short. Not everything can be explained. But it's important to get to that fence. It's important to be able to know up to that the way the rules work. Because what you mentioned beforehand is just an important point. It's interesting to notice, if you discuss with different people, some people find it more comforting that there is happenstance, and some people find it more terrifying that it's happenstance. Okay? So, I mean, some people say, like you're saying, that it's comforting that not everything that happens is a target, you know? And some people will say, that's terrifying. I want to be specifically governed. I don't want to be left to happenstance. Now, do you see that? So different people are comforted by different things, which is perhaps why it's important to discuss to what degree are different humans at different points invested in this. Again, I really apologize, but I'm not going to be able to do that justice tonight. But I do want to get to this particular within the greatest scheme of it. But that's an important point. I think as you speak to different people, you'll find different people resonate with that differently. I think you can sense why. Okay.
I was just going to say really quickly, it seems to me like in the Chumash, there's like a lot of examples of the Chumash doesn't tell the story like God made this happen, God made that happen, God made this happen, and then in the middle it will throw in and then God did this. Meaning, like when we talk about the stories about the Avot, you know, like this person's living here, that one's living there, and then you know God blessed him and they had a child. You know, so, but there are children being born everywhere. It's not always, you know, a blessing. So I feel like the way that it's written, I feel like it's like the way the story is told in the Chumash tells us that God zeroes in on certain people and events really specifically, and that other ones just kind of go along. Like Yaakov, when his flocks, he had so many more than Laban. Like God's telling us, I'm doing this. He's getting rich. This is my plan, you know. Meaning other sheep and goats are being born left and right, left and right, left and right, left and right, and it's not specific.
You're
or,
right.
Or is God using them as examples, and is it all specific?
Yeah, you're right. And you know, what you're just saying, the discussion you're having right now is a discussion the Mepharshim have. The Mepharshim actually have this very discussion over here. Are they being singled out because they're special? Or are they being singled out because they're exemplars and they're what the Torah is trying to drive in a specific message? Now, so that's the discussion you're having now is the reflection of hundreds of years of reflection on this particular topic. And it comes back to within humanity, the differing degrees. So there's definitely room for both of these views. And again, I'd really apologize not to be able to do it further. I want
and
to,
the
but...
the fact that you're moving, you're going to have to find someone to come and take it further with us.
Okay. I really apologize. I think it's important just to not to try to overdo, because we'll end up with a lot of different pieces in different places. Okay, so I'd rather to get one particular, within this one particular topic, more well covered. So the other approach, and this is an approach which started appearing about 300 years ago, in general, And this approach was expressed by a number of masters, the Hasidic masters, and even the Vilna Gaon, who was not a Hasidic master, but was well-versed in Kabbalistic thought. I'd like to draw your attention perhaps to just a paragraph on page 4. This is in Source 9, the very top of page 4. This is a story told about the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement as a whole. And this is written by the Rav Aaron Roth, the founder of the Todos Aaron Hasidic community in Jerusalem. And he said the following: "It once happened that the holy scholar, our teacher, the Baal Shem Tov, may his merit serve as protection for us, was in a field with his students. All of a sudden, a strong wind blew and many leaves fell from the trees onto the ground. The Baal Shem Tov said, 'My sons, know that this wind that just passed this instant was due to a specific worm that was situated on one of the leaves. The sun was shining particularly strongly on this worm, and the worm cried out to God. God sent this wind, which blew many leaves to the ground, and this leaf, with the storm, was one of those leaves.'" What the Baal Shem Tov was doing is something very different to what we've seen happening up till now. And if you read, and I left you many sources of the first approach, we'll call it the traditional approach, what the Baal Shem Tov does and many after him, and this is perhaps something which we're perhaps more schooled with in general, is that every detail. Now, notice this worm was not affecting anybody particularly. It wasn't to do with the people around them. It happened to affect them, but the point is it wasn't as a function of what is happening to them. And there's other stories to the degree where you hear about Simcha Bonim Peshisva, who would pick up a grain of sand and say that, "God, you wanted the specific grain to be exactly where it was, and you put it back down." Is it meaning to say that we'll call it the infinite concentration on detail, that every specific thing has a destination, has an address, has a place and purpose. And this is something which has become much more prolific in Jewish education as a whole. It's a less of a rationalistic, traditional approach to receive beforehand. And this has taken a greater hold of Jewish theology of the last 300 years. We'll call it the expansive approach. The traditional and the expansive approach. And I don't know, just to take a vote, which are you more common with, just more commonly, you think about more often, or you're more aware of?
The spiritual one.
The spiritual one, the more traditional? Traditional?
I like this one.
Okay. Traditional and traditional as well? Okay, so it depends, I guess, where it is. And if you go to certain schools, you'll hear that if you're to tell them that God wasn't controlling every blade of grass, their eyes would drop out of their sockets because they... Right, it's something which is like it's taken for granted, and you go to other places, and they're like, "Why would you think?" So just to appreciate, there's a broad range over here. Yes.
What's the source for the where it says how every blade of grass is like an angel, where it's saying it to grow? Where is that from?
So there's a Midrash Rabbah in Bereishis which says that there's no such thing as every grass has a malach over it, literally forcing it to grow. Now. Just to appreciate this, is what does that mean? You know, coming back to Leslie, does that mean to say that God set into system a system in which there are malachim, which are the messengers of God, which are doing His purpose? But the point is that that's still a mechanism. Or do you say that no, that was specifically ordained that grass should be growing? Do you see this? There's already room for and what each of these approaches will do is they'll look at the plethora of all the sources discussed. And there are going to be ones which are more difficult for each side to interpret, okay, without going into all of them. But there are going to be ones which are more difficult for each of them to interpret. What I would like to point out, and this is just as means, I know that we're already coming to, I don't want to take too much of your time, but what I'd like to do is just to think towards bridging. This is a particular argument made, which is an argument made by a number of more contemporary thinkers. For instance, Rav Chaim Friedlander, who wrote a book on Hashgacha Pratis. Rav Arya Leibowitz has a very wonderful, readable English book called Hashgacha Pratis, published by Feldheim. A number of this is one particular approach, and I put that as with an asterisk. There are other approaches. But even within the Rambam, Maimonides, within the Sefer Achinuch, within the Ramchal, who all agree with the traditional approach, there are discrepancies somewhat, because for instance, let's take a look, just look in Source 13. This is the Sefer Achinuch, who beforehand was telling us that leaves blowing off isn't God micromanaging. And listen to what he says here. The exodus from Egypt, this is the last page, the exodus from Egypt is an indication and proof of the creation of the world, that there is pre-existent God with will and power who gives all created things their being. The Exodus must permanently affirm human faith in the knowledge of eternal God and the faith that his divine providence and power extends to all groups and individuals. All groups and individuals. But he was the one who just said that the leaves falling off the trees wasn't so much something that mattered. So even within the traditional approach, there are cloudy, murky passages which you have to square as a whole, which leads, and there are many more of these.
So are you suggesting that he means by groups and individuals more than humans?
So he says, the words in Hebrew, this perhaps says, Bichlalim uvipratim kolam. Bichlalim means general. That was the word he used for the animal kingdom. If you want to follow through with the language, that was the word he used with the. So that's why it's complex, which leads some thinkers to say, which leads the Sifsei Chaim to suggest, Rav Chaim Friedlander, the following. That effectively, let's think about it from this perspective. If God is interacting with a being on account of its specific actions, right? So a particular being is having divine providence in their lives because of what they're doing, how they're leading their life, then who does it make sense that God has specific or called interaction providence with? Only beings which can choose to make those decisions. If you think about it, right? If God is interacting and saying, you know what, this being is doing such a good thing, I'll do something special for it, or I'll take something away from it. Well, it only makes sense if that being is capable of making decisions, right and wrong. That's what we call Hashkachas Mishpat, which means to say that we'll call it providence of justice. God interacts with humanity as a whole in account, and this is again without getting too complex about it, with which individuals and how, but in general, humanity, God interacts with humanity based on their actions. Animals, is this a good dog or a bad dog? Well, it depends. You know, animals aren't particularly bad or good. Animals actually, by their very existence, are expressing God's will. So God interacts with them in this argument also with Hashkacha Pratis, also divine providence, but not for their particular sake as this dog, this wildebeest. Because in the end of the day, this wildebeest didn't do anything specifically to bring in or bring out more Hashkacha Pratis. He isn't accountable for his actions. He's existing by God's will. So how does God treat them? Specifically as well, but just for another purpose. Do you see this? There's two tracks within divine providence. The track that affects humanity, and the track that affects humans. Both specifically, but specifically for what? Humans, because of what they're doing, and that's much more complex, because it really that's a red button, right? Because then we get into, what about when it doesn't seem to work in that way? What about, right, do you see that? That's why I'm just going to give you back to four, is there's more going on there. There's much more going on than specific actions. But the point is, let's just draw with general strokes. God interacts with humanity based on their actions. That means to say that God cares about individuals, will do for individuals because they have the right to choose. They have the ability to be able to choose to be or not to be. And animals, for a specific purpose. What purpose? What purpose? If God's not relating to that animal because of its purpose, then what purpose do you think Hashem is relating to that specific animal for? So what's left now? Yes? If God is interacting with animals on a specific level, just not for its particular purpose. That wildebeest who happened to get killed and his brother who survived, Hashem ordained within this argument that that specific one would and that one wouldn't. But if it's not for its own sake, then for whose sake is it? What purpose would there be that there would be a specific divine purpose?
To help human
beings. To help? Okay, so but the problem is, what about the wildebeest? The wildebeest is not affecting human beings. Do you see that? The dog, yes. The wildebeest, not.
Well, there are people that survive on wildebeest out there on the African plain. They need healthy animals
for
us too.
Great, fantastic. So there is of course the chance that could be, but just two points within this direction. Number one is, as you're saying, is that up till recently, the way that physics generally works is that if there's a small input, there's a small output. If there's a large input, there's a large output. If I put my foot on the accelerator just a little bit, the car only goes so much. If I put it further, it accelerates at a greater rate. Until the advent of chaos theory. And when there became a realization that within certain systems, within weather, for instance, small things can generate big outcomes. So first of all, we don't know how much a particular animal or tree falling in Siberia or comet hitting a unlivable area does affect humanity. We don't know that.
The butterfly effect?
What was that?
Yeah. Butterfly effect?
Exactly, the butterfly effect. We don't know. We don't know how much it affects humanity, and more so in ecology. Only now are we realizing the degree of destruction that we've caused, right? Humanity's caused. We don't think that when you dump certain things in the middle of the ocean that it does too much. We're only finding out now, right? We don't realize how much the effects of our actions on. Here's another advertisement. In 2 weeks' time, in the Yarache Kala, which is the Women's Learning Conference that the Coil is going to be hosting in Skokie, so I'll be speaking about environmentalism. So just for if you're interested in that particular topic, Judaism and environmentalism, apologetics, or actually we'll call it axiomatic principles. That's number one. Is maybe every specific animal, everything that's happening in nature is being affected. Hashgacha Pratis, specific providence, but for what? We don't know how great it affects. But more than that, and this with this I'd like to just close, is these are the words of Rav Yekusel Yehuda Halberstam in the 16th source. He was the son's Klosenberg Rebbe, and a very interesting person. He survived the Holocaust and rebuilt everything afterwards. A very incredible person. And there are two books about his life which are very inspiring. He said the following. Granted that the Rambam, this is in source 16 on the last page, granted that the Rambam had a different opinion regarding this, but in truth, according to our sages, even a bird is not trapped without specific individual divine providence from above. Further, he's quoting a particular source that he relies on in the Yerushalmi. Furthermore, it is known that all of creation is on account of man. And even if we do not know how or why, nevertheless it is true, for there is nothing extra or unnecessary in creation. And that which appears extra is also for a specific purpose relating to mankind. And what he's saying over here is not necessarily even on an ecological level, not necessarily even on a butterfly effect level. What he's saying over here is on a metaphysical plane, there is some sort of effect. Now, that's something which we can't measure with a thermometer or barometer or an altimeter, right? The point is that there's going to be certain things where human actions do affect the world at large, and the world at large affects humans. And therefore, within this particular argument, maybe even the Rambam, even Maimonides, even the Sefer HaChinuch will agree. What is the difference between the specific providence on humans and animals? Not in terms of the degree of concentration that God has on each individual, but why? For humans, why? Because they have the choice to live the lives deserving or undeserving of these particular actions. Animals don't have that. Therefore, they're affected in a specific way, equally as specific. But for what purpose? For the greater purpose of the universe, we'll call it a human-centric view, where everything is affected and does affect, and therefore it's part of, we'll call it, that Radak's greater expanded view on a metaphysical plane. This is one particular argument, and I don't want to eclipse the fact that this is only one particular direction taken in understanding these traditional sources. There are other ways which leave them more space for, we'll call it, a system of happenstance as well within this. But for the time being, this is within understanding that. And what I'd like to leave with you for thought is, as has been touched upon this evening many times, is within humanity, there must be differing levels. And those are the two last scenes. Winning the lottery, and also winning a sort of lottery, but in the context of prayer. Right? So how there are different gradations within humanity is also significant. And that's really the next part of this conversation, to draw out the rules. But I appreciate your time. Any questions are definitely welcome.